Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 9, season 9, all the 9s. We're nearly at the end of the season, I keep saying that, but there's still plenty of rallying still going on, there's still plenty of gossip, there's still plenty of rumours, there's still plenty of this and that, and is he going there, is he going to do that, and musical chairs, some may call it, in WRC, but there's also other things going on this weekend, which we are going to talk about. But, without further ado, at this point, I always say, on my left, hello Jack Bennion.
Hello Tony Simpson.
And on my right, I say, hello Cheeky Ryan Champion.
Hello Tony and Jack.
There you go, we've got a joint intro, everybody's happy. Are we all okay?
Very well,
good,
thank you.
Good, thank you.
That's alright then. Right, silly season, as much as I hate that, do you know what? Silly season and banter are my two most despised words at the moment.
That's three words.
Yeah, I know, thanks. That's why you're a journalist, Jack, and I don't know what I am. Your front page today, Jack Bennion, the WRC Super Team, Meek, Loeb, Ogier, talk to me about it.
David Evans has been chatting to Yves Mouton about his team for next season, and there's some rumours that Sebastian Loeb might be coming back to do some rallies next year, so we could get Sebastian Loeb in a Citroen sort of for multiple rallies next year, which is a possibility. And also, they've made no secret in the French press or with us either that they're going to go after Sebastian Ogier for next year quite heavily. So, very interesting to see what kind of driver lineup Citroen come out with. And I guess allowing Mikkelsen to go to Hyundai makes a little bit more sense now, doesn't it, in terms of these comments?
Very much so. Right, I think this isn't actually that far from reality, really, is it? It's not a dream team. Well, it is a dream team in the sense of what they've achieved. But certainly, you know, I think we touched upon it the other week. You know, Sebastian Loeb coming back now, the kind of the Peugeot Citroën thing is all kind of one motorsport department. Yeah, he can come back and do some shows and events. Chris Meek, of course, is under contract anyway, so he's there anyway. And now the big play for Sebastian Ogier. So really, it's not dreamland stuff, this, is it?
No, it isn't, and I guess what's great is that we see Chris Meek for us as part of a fantastic super team, if you like, and not rumours of other sorts that we've seen for the last few weeks. It would be exciting, wouldn't it, for WRC if they did manage to put this team together. Loeb would be interesting. I'm sure he's such a professional, he will come back and do a great job. I mean, you'd have to question how much hunger Sebastian Loeb's got to come back and do the rallies, but nonetheless, if you put him in the same team as Mr. Ogier, I'm sure there's a lot of water under the bridge. I'm sure those two get on perfectly now, but I'm sure he'll still want to be competitive against Ogier. Like we talked about last week, Ogier going back to Citroën, can we see it? It does make a lot of sense because it could be, like as we said, the last big move of his career, and it could be that he stays with that that French team thereafter. But you know, Malcolm Wilson, as we know, not only did Malcolm manage to get him in the team, Malcolm will be doing all he can to try and keep him in the team. So I don't think this is a done deal yet. And you have to feel a little bit for Craig Breen, who's done a fabulous job all year. Obviously, if this so-called super team came off, then he would be down to sort of sharing a third car, which would be unfortunate for him because he's had a brilliant year. But I'm sure Citroën must appreciate the great job he's done this year, and let's hope that it's very much part of their plans going forward.
Absolutely, Jack. You're a man, of course. You're a man of the written word as well as the spoken word now, of course, because you're a multi talented guy. But is this a massive PR campaign due to the fact that it hasn't been a great year for them? To put the French, the French icon Sebastian Ogier, of the current generation, and the French icon of the previous generation, back in a French team. That's a massive kind of flying of the flag, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. You know, it's obviously, as a French team, they're going to want to have the most successful French rally driver of all time driving for them, aren't they? And Sebastian Ogier is an obvious choice for next year in terms of, as far as many people are concerned, he's the best rally driver out there. And I think you could go a lot further wrong than going for Sebastian next year. If he's on the market and he's up for up for grabs, then why would you not go after him? And I think they'd do themselves a lot of harm if they didn't sort of come out and say they were openly going for OJ, in my opinion, because if they're not, you know, are they really trying to win the world championship? If the best driver in the world's out there on the market, you've got to go for him. So I'm not convinced how many rallies we'll actually see Sebastian out for. And from a personal point of view, I haven't changed my views. I still think it'd be better for Citroën to run Breen all year or to run a young driver and really use that seat for someone to develop. But I can see the like you said, the PR benefits of it, and it's never going to be a bad thing to see Sebastian Loeb back in the sport.
I suppose, you know, I touched upon this last week, and I know you did, weren't having it, Jack, and I know Rye was kind of 50-50 as well, but it's just iconic, really. I'm just looking at the image of the three faces across the course, and there's Sebastian Loeb in the middle, of course, who's been doing World Rallycross this year in the Peugeot 208, run that by the very successful Hansen team, but of course with Red Bull back. And I just wonder whether this whole Red Bull thing is also part of the whole thing of Loeb being involved, whether there is sponsors, you know, whether it's Abu Dhabi, whether it is Red Bull or whatever, who kind of want to see this happening as well, Jack.
You can never underestimate the sort of commercial aspects of deals like this being done behind the scenes, and it's very difficult to kind of know what's going on there and who's actually pulling the strings and who's paying the money. But yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if there was some interest from Red Bull there, who would, you know, as we've said already, who wouldn't want to see Sebastian Loeb back in the WRC. And whether he does well or whether he does poorly, it's going to be a good PR exercise for Citroën, and to have him there is going to create a lot of buzz and attention, and you know, imagine how much interest we're going to have when we get to Monte Carlo at the start of the year. Everyone's wondering who's going to have the best car again, and also everyone's going to be wondering just how quick Sebastian Loeb's going to be.
Right, is this a disservice? Is this a disrespectful comment of just simply saying this is a PR exercise?
I think, like we said, Citroën have obviously had a bad year. We don't really need to, to expand on that one anymore. They came back into the sport this year as potentially favourites. They're in a bad place, and they need to put that right, don't they? I mean, as we know, senior management are involved in this now, and they're involved in decisions going forward, so it would seem. So, you know, they're going to be doing everything from a Citroën point of view to put Citroën on the top step next year. And, you know, we've seen Hyundai doing an improved job year on year on year, and they're now very, very competitive. We've seen Toyota come in and make a massive impact, and, you know, M Sport are doing the best job of any and leading the championship currently. So Citroën do have to up the game. And, you know, if they could go to the championship with a lineup like has been suggested, then they've got no better drivers. And, you know, it would be quite good for Chris Meek as well. I mean, obviously, we know that Chris had a difficult year, but if he was teamed up alongside the two drivers that are regarded the best of their generation for the last 15 years, whatever Chris does alongside them, and I fully believe he has the speed to compete, but, you know, Chris can compare himself against them and see what they're doing in an equal car. He can see their data. And as we've seen this year with Ogier, he doesn't necessarily need the best car in every rally to be leading the championship. And I'm sure whatever Ogier was doing in the car, then Chris would be targeting that. So it would be an interesting one for Chris Meek as well.
Jack, again, I know you're quite passionate. You're a massive Sebastian Loeb fan. Is this the super team that at first glance it is? Or is this purely, as I say, you're quite keen to see Craig in, you know, Craig, as we all acknowledge the fact, has done a fantastic job as well. And, you know, it seems, I think Stefan seems to be working on the R5 program now. We just hope that we don't see Craig kind of bumped down to an R5 program, really, because he's been there and done that, hasn't he?
I think if you look at it, it's most likely that Sebastian and Craig would share a seat. Unless Citroën want to run a fourth car. So the logistics of getting Sebastian involved is interesting, and that's a completely separate story altogether, I think, in terms of what rallies does he do. Does he just do the tarmac rounds? Does he just do the European rounds? Does he do any of the, you know, the Argentinas or anything like that? Is his Peugeot program going to continue with World Rallycross, and will he have to avoid any clashes in that championship? You know, there's so many questions involved in this, and he's not even signed a piece of paper yet. So I think it's going to be, you know, a lot of this kind of stuff's going to come out over the coming weeks. But there's just one more thing I find about this, and I just think it's Citroën's way of announcing themselves as a contender for next year for me. This, because if you look at how they are now, Chris Meek, we've talked about, has had a terrible year, and Craig Breen has been very consistent, but still not really a threat for WRC wins this year. So going into the off-season, Thierry Neuville and Andreas Mikkelsen, you know, you'd like to think they'd fancy their chances there, wouldn't you, going into next year? The Citroen's not been good. Craig's not quite there in terms of experience to fight for WRC wins, and Chris has, you know, had a terrible year, as we've already discussed. So going into the off-season, you know, they've got to fancy their chances against that. But when you start adding Sebastian Ogier and Sebastian Loeb into the equation, do Thierry and Andreas have to second-guess a little bit and just think, are we going to be on top next year? You know, how quick are these guys going to be? And it just creates a few more questions, I think. And I think it's a good move by Citroen to kind of peg back Hyundai in that sense, because, you know, no one's going to want to go up against an Ogier, Loeb, Meek trio, are they?
No, I guess not. And I know Rye made reference to this before as well. There's a little bit of history, isn't there, Jack, between the two Sebastians? You know, a lot of water under bridges, as Rye said before. But, you know, it's been, you know, I've just opened up your page two, page three. Man management will be the key to Citroen's all-star lineup. And does that bring an added stress that perhaps the management don't already need? You know, they've got a lot going on with the car. So to have to manage drivers now and, you know, relationships and possible clashes, does that add a whole new layer to this and almost another problem?
I think, you know, the problem that Sebastian Ogier had was with the Citroen management at the time. It wasn't with Yves Matton, and wasn't particularly with Sebastian Loeb, although, you know, there were some comments flying around, and I think both drivers were frustrated. Loeb believed that he should have been, you know, the number one driver, and that he'd done enough to deserve that, which I think is fair in his situation. But also, Sebastian's a young up-and-comer who's clearly good enough to win rallies, and was upset that he wasn't getting the chance to kind of do that on an equal footing. But I think, you know, a lot of the people who Sebastian had his problems with aren't at Citroen anymore, or aren't in senior roles in the rallying department anymore. So I think, to answer the question briefly, I think that there's always going to be problems when you've got drivers of that standard fighting for victories. So I talked about Thierry and Andreas last week. They're going to have problems next year. There's absolutely no doubt about that in my mind, although they're very good friends. It's always difficult when you've got drivers of that standard competing against each other. So, yeah, it's going to be difficult for the Citroen management, but I'm not buying into this sort of Sebastian rivalry of Loeb and Ogier that is being kind of slowly built up by people on social media and stuff, because I don't believe that Sebastian Ogier has actually got a problem with Loeb. I think his problem was with the old Citroen management.
There you go. But this brings me to an interesting kind of... I dug out some old rally magazines at the weekend, and I picked up the one, and it was a photograph of Panizzi and Francois Delacour having a little bit of an interesting inter-team debate. I don't know whether you remember this one, boys. There was a little bit of a fallout. And I think it was to do with potentially illegal recce on a particular event or something like that. And I was thinking about kind of explosive relationships then between teammates. And I guess that was possibly one of the more explosive ones where I think it nearly did come to blows, didn't it? I think it was... They were certainly not a million miles apart from getting to that point, right? Teammates, relationships, are they that important?
Yeah, of course they're important, because ultimately it's a team game, and these manufacturers are in it to win the manufacturer's title as much as the driver's title. And to some manufacturers, it's more important than the driver's title. So obviously the relationship in the team is important, because you want to keep all the team working in the same direction. You want to keep development going in one direction, but you know it can win championships without that. I mean, we've seen it in Formula One recently, haven't we? You don't necessarily need harmony in the team for it to be successful, but ultimately I think everybody in the team feels a lot more comfortable if that harmony is there. We see it less in rallying than probably we do in circuit racing, because you're not often fighting for the same piece of tarmac. But nonetheless, you know, we'll probably talk a little bit more about one Colin McRae later on in the show. But, you know, remember Colin and Carlos in Catalonia all those years ago. And again, it was a similar situation where the young hot shoe was coming up and he wanted his chance to win the world championship. And he had to finish second on Carlos's home rally. you know, we do see it from time to time in rallying, and it's a great story, isn't it? And yeah, I very much remember Delacour and Panizzi going at it, and they were both strong characters, and I think it had more than once that they fell out. But part of the sport, part of motorsport, and like I say, it gives us all something to talk about, doesn't it?
I think it does. People like Jack need a story like that, don't you, Jack?
Absolutely.
I'm only assuming that your colleague from NN has spent quite a lot of time in France this past week, because it's quite a big story with regards to their R5 car, which is got some strong feedback with regards to comparisons, of course, to the older machine, which seems to be like night and day, but a couple of real tweaks, and unfortunately they can't use the paddle shift.
Looks like, well, yeah, it's an interesting one, this one. They've developed their R5 with a paddle shift gearbox, which was introduced, I believe, earlier this year. It was a rule that the FIA had introduced to say that the R5 cars could have paddle shift gearboxes, because according to all involved, they don't they don't add any performance advantage. It's more of just a comfort thing for the driver. But Citroën have developed their car with this in place, which none of the other R5 manufacturers have done, because none of them have developed the car quite as late as Citroën have. So the way the gearbox is laid out in the interior of the car is all going to have to be changed, and it's the FIA has had a bit of a U-turn on using the paddle shift. So it looks like, as it stands, the R5 cars aren't going to be allowed to use paddle shifts, which I know M Sport are developing one, so that'll set them back a little bit. But it's particularly affected Citroën, as I said, because of the interior, because they've built their interior without having a stick there. So they're going to have to move everything around, and it's going to take a bit of time to fix everything up. So they're most likely going to miss Monte Carlo.
Right. Is it just purely aesthetics, or is it a much quicker thing to use using the paddle?
Oh, no, it's not two ways about it. Moving from a sequential shift to a paddle is almost as big a jump as it is going from a H pattern to a sequential, because it suddenly allows you to change gear where you wouldn't even with sequential, because obviously it's sequential gear, but you've still got to take your hand off the steering wheel. So with a paddle shift, you find that you can change gear mid-corner, where you wouldn't with a sequential gearbox. So it definitely makes it easier to drive with a paddle shift, but is it any quicker? Not necessarily. It just makes the driver's life a little bit easier. I mean obviously we saw it with the new generation WRC cars, with the 1600 WRC cars. To begin with, they were on a sequential, and then they moved to paddle. Did it really make any difference? No, not really. It makes the driver's life a little bit easier.
This is Absolute Rally, Pace Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents, or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Jack Bengen, we're going to come to the final round of the Preston MSA British Rally Championship. Of course, something you're going to be covering. You're off to the Isle of Man tomorrow morning, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, that's right.
So all packed, ready to go?
Not yet, no, but I'll do that after I finish recording. I've had a busy day today. I've been in the office this morning, so just got back and obviously speaking to you guys, and then I'll be off after that.
I would pack a cagoule, Jack Bengen. Pack a cagoule.
I will, always. Yeah, yeah. For every rally I go to, there's always a waterproof in the bottom of the bag. It's a must do.
Is that the grey and orange one?
It is.
Yeah, it's well known. It's well known. It's got a bit of a following, that coat, I believe.
Hopefully not literally.
No, of course not. Jack, you wrote a great piece this week, as ever. It's all to play for. There isn't... Hang on a minute. Something's happened. Jack Bengen, I've had a text message coming. Yeah.
Okay.
Ryan Champion's texted me mid-program. Yeah, he's corrected me.
Okay.
No, I didn't strictly correct you. I was just asking a question.
Yeah. Is it Prestone by chance? Is that what it relates to?
Yeah. He likes to do that. So, do you want me to read it out? Yeah, yeah. Let's read it out before we go on. We've got time. Yeah. It's all right. It's cool. Everything's cool.
I did send it to Jack Bengen as well, but of course he's using his phone.
That's why I thought I'd read it out to him. The last round of the BRC is in Preston. Because yeah, there you go. Is that Leyland Test Track? No, Leyland Test Track is now a Howsam Estate Ryan champion.
Oh, right. Okay. Is that why
that's
it's
why
not
in Preston?
Preston?
It's in Isle of Man. That's the Preston MSA British Rally Championship. That's what I was making reference to. Preston.
Preston. There's a knee on the end. Stone. Preston. Preston.
Yeah, that's what, there you go. It's kind of what I said. Yeah. And I'll be honest with you, we've got bogged down in this and it wasn't even that funny. Yeah, okay.
No, I agree.
Anyway, Jack Bennion, you've wrote an excellent piece as ever. We've talked about permutations towards the end of the programme of what needs to happen. You're going out covering it. Fredericks to lose. That's where I'm going with this.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's we had a bit of a joke in the office about Fredericks' quote from the end of the rally. He was sitting in his car at the finish of the Ulster, and I said, you know, how are you feeling going into the last round? And he said, well, I'd rather be leading by 32 points than be behind by 32 points, which was obviously the matter-of-fact quote of the century. But he's absolutely right. He's got a big lead, and it's going to take a lot to topple him, really. You know, he needs to finish second and third on the two legs to guarantee the title. And then, obviously, Keith Cronin needs to win both legs and have Frederick finish no higher than third on those legs to win. So it's going to be interesting. There's a lot of permutations. There's a lot of ways the championship can be decided, and we'll find out on Saturday night who's got the title.
I haven't looked at weather. Last year it was glorious. It was possibly the most glorious Manx I think I've ever seen and ever been involved with. This year we've had some horrendous rain this side of the island, as it were. We've been absolutely belting down here in Liverpool over the last 48 hours, and they normally get the weather just after us as it happens. Have you had a look at the weather, Jack?
I think there's showers forecast for Friday, I think I saw, but I've not looked too much further into the distance than that. I like to try and look on the day and get more of an accurate reading.
Right, okay. Well, as I say, there's been plenty of rain, and I mean proper standing rain as well, that's been created. But right, you've done the Manx God knows how many times, probably a lot more than me. Have you ever gone into the final round like this having to just drive?
Not on the Manx, I haven't. But having said that, I do remember leading Super 1600 on the Manx one year on the last day, and all I had to do was really drive around with a 2.5 minute lead, and one of those Manx bank sides just kind of jumped out at me. And Puma Super 1600 had three wheels on it, and it can happen quite easily on the Isle of Man, as we'll chat to a well-known Manxman about in a little while. And the Isle of Man is a difficult place to drive slowly. You know, when I hit the bank, I'd been through that same stage the night before, and just went a little slower through a sort of left-right kink, and the car got thrown across the road, and it looks like it's a grass bank in the Isle of Man, and it never is. It's a stone wall. The grass has grown over 200 years, and it's a very unforgiving place, and it's not an easy place just to drive for a result. And then, of course, you put the weather into the equation. If it is dry, it makes life a lot easier, because the Manx is notoriously difficult in the wet. Huge amount of surface changes. A lot of the roads, you know, get resurfaced year to year, which means that they do vary a lot year to year. And you get a lot of the shiny tarmac. We might associate it with the Irish roads, but you get a lot of it in the Isle of Man. So literally you'll have quite good grip on a reasonable surface. You'll come to a junction, turn onto another road, and it's just completely shiny with no grip whatsoever. Or worse than that, you come around the corner and break for a T-junction on it. It's a tricky place. Likewise, probably one of the most rewarding rally venues in the world, bar none, because some of the stages are just fantastic. But it is easier if you're pushing than it is to go steady in some ways. You know, nobody wants to make a mistake going steady. If you push in, you push in. But fantastic rally, very tricky.
Absolutely. Jack, it's something that you're quite passionate about, of course, the junior section. The junior section is still not all tied up either, is it?
No, absolutely not. It's probably much wider open, I'd probably say, than the main championship. We've got William Crichton, who's currently leading the championship, and he needs to win on whichever leg he plays his joker on. The Joker works just like power stage points does in the WRC. So if you win, you get 5 points, second, four, and then it goes down after that. So he just needs to win on whichever leg he plays Joker on to win the title. Callum Devine needs to win both legs to win the championship. He's in Opel Adam, whereas William's in a Peugeot 208. So interesting to see how those two match up against each other. And, you know, you've got to favour the Adam on tarmac. So it'll be interesting to see if Callum has any sort of reliability problems, which he seems to, unfortunately, get quite a bit in his Opel. And then we've got Oscar Solberg, who can still win the championship, son of Henning, of course, and he can take the title if either he'll need William and Callum to retire from both legs, a bit like Matt Edwards in the main championship. So it's going to be interesting, that one, but it's sort of winner takes all between William Crichton and Callum Devine, I think. So those two have really impressed this year and been fantastic in the championship all year, so either one will be a worthy winner.
Happy days. Ryan Champion, if you could give all these drivers a little bit of wisdom, a little bit of advice, what would it be?
I think some of the things I just mentioned. I mean, the one of the other things on the Isle of Man is the speed. You know, as you know, Tony, from doing it numerous times, it's incredibly high speed in places. And then you'll literally turn off a real wide, fast, well-surfaced road onto a road that's not much wider than the car itself. And so you've got a lot of variation in speed, from high speed to tight stuff, and a lot of variation in surface. So I would say it's picking up those two things, picking up the difference in speed and also the surface changes. That would be, some of the key things about the Isle of Man.
I hope some of you are listening, because that's a man who went quite well over there. I never did. There you go. Probably the best result last year, just saying.
It's a man who ran out of road too often on the Isle of Man. I don't
know.
Hey, you're the only one of us who won a championship on the Isle of Man, Tony.
I suppose I am, yeah. I've not thought about it like that. There you go.
I don't like to
brag being BBC 4 champion in 2016. I don't like to bring it up. That's why I said 2016.
I disagree, Ryan. My journalistic feelings on that is that you're never an ex-champion because you've won the championship. You can't lose the championship once you've won it.
Therefore, you've opened up a whole can of worms with Ryan Champion now, haven't you? God, he's going to start. He's going to start dusting off.
Sorry, Ryan. It's just one of those quibbles I have with people calling people ex-winners or ex-champions. I don't like it because I think it takes away.
No, he's going to start pulling out now. He was like the Road Rally tabletop champion when he was 11 years old or something. That's what.
No, Tony, I don't need to. I was born a champion.
Ah, yeah. I bet you that was on a press release. I bet you that was on like one of the, when you were doing the 106 Cup or something like that. That was on a press release on a winning round or something like that. I bet you it was. Please tell me it was. Please.
I don't think I would be quite that corny, but it was the only obvious answer at that point.
Boys, we need to crack on a couple of things. I feel quite bad saying this, but with all what's going on in the world of WRC at the moment, and obviously we kind of get a little bit sucked in, I suppose, with our local championship, IAB, in the BRC. It's also around the BRC this weekend, Jack Bengen, and friend of the show. We've not had him on for a little while. We'll catch up with him very soon, of course. Chris Ingram is continuing his battle, along with his new co-driver, on the penultimate round of BRC.
Yeah, he's got Ross Wittick out there with him this weekend, and the rally's in Rome, which I'm very interested to kind of keep an eye on if I can. Obviously, I'll be at the Manx, but I'll try and keep an eye on what's going on in Rome, and I'm sure there'll be some mega pictures from the start there, because I'm sure they'll be going past the Colosseum and doing all that kind of stuff. One thing BRC does do well is all that kind of fanfare before the events and all that kind of stuff, so it'd be interesting to see that. And then they go out into the mountains for the stages, so it'd be interesting to see how everyone gets on. I think all the championships are pretty much up for grabs with not too many rounds left, and Chris being one of them benefited from Jari Hittinen's off on the last round, so he's got a little bit of a gap, but he still needs to make sure he's scoring good points, and Jari Hittinen will be coming back strong on this event, I'm sure, as well. So we've seen so far Chris has kind of had the edge on the tarmac in the Canaries. He was good there, and kind of had the measure of Jari, who's got less tarmac experience than Chris, I'd say. So it'll be interesting to see how those two fight this weekend, and whether Chris can extend his lead in the championship or at least maintain what he's got.
Happy days. Good luck, Chris. I'm sure you listen to this retrospectively, but we wish you well. We wish you well.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Click motorsportauctions.com. Now, one of the world's leading motorsport online classified adverts and auction sites. It's easy to use, providing listing platforms that enable you to sell race and rally cars, surplus parts, transporters, clothing, workshop, and pit equipment. We specialize in cataloging, listing, and selling large quantities of motorsport related surplus and obsolete stock. Click motorsportauctions.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Boys, I've kind of got any other business, but also I'm really keen to acknowledge the fact that at this point in the podcast, we, you know, it's on the 15th of September, which is in 2 days' time from when we record this. So it's 10 years since we lost Colin, and we've got Mark Higgins coming up a little bit later on the podcast, who was talking very much about his experiences of working with Colin and things like that. Some stories which he can tell and some stories which couldn't make it to the podcast. But Jack, you're younger than Ryan and I, unfortunately, by a considerable margin, pretty much half our age. How old are you now, Jack?
24.
You're 24. 24. So you are actually nearly half our age, which is frightening. Now, you know, it's 10 years ago, so you would have been 14 years old. And you know, I suppose, what was the impression that, because to me, it's almost like the generation after, perhaps you would have been, you know, Sebastian Loeb, we know you're a massive fan of, but did Colin grab you at an early age? Was did you really get involved? Did you really understand what the following he kind of achieved, kind of gathered?
Absolutely, from a very early age, actually. My, you know, I've spoken about it on the podcast before, but when I was very, very, very young, my dad was a big McRae fan, and the two videos I grew up with were the 1988 British Rally Championship and the 1994 World Rally Championship, and 88 being the year he was in the SMT Nova and throwing that around and scoring some outrageous overall results with that car, nowhere near where he should have been. You know, remember fondly pictures of him sort of congratulating Jimmy McRae, who won his first Scottish rally in 88. He'd taken a long time to kind of break that duck and get that win, and there were some good scenes of Colin hugging Jimmy after scoring that win. So 88 was quite a good year for that. And then 94, he had a lot of bad luck, I think, but one of his most crushing wins in New Zealand. He was absolutely fantastic there that year, and there's some famous onboard from Portugal in 94 as well, which is very, very popular on YouTube, and that was part of the video as well. And just watching that from, you know, sort of 4 or 5 years old, it was very easy to be attracted towards Colin's style. You know, one hand on the steering wheel, one hand on the gearbox, and throwing his 555 liveried car around. And ever since then, you know, I was always a big fan of Colin, kept an eye on his results, and yeah, you know, probably not as invested as you guys would have been, as sort of a little bit older than me at the time. But yeah, definitely grew up with a lot of fond memories of Colin, and he was definitely a bit of a hero.
Right, I think that's everything that Jack says there, I think, is pretty much at least the standard response of pretty much every rally fan, isn't it? You know, everybody has got that imagery of Colin, and you know, we talk to Mark a little bit about it later on in the podcast, and you know, he wasn't as ragged as perhaps as what people remembered, was he?
No, I don't think he was ragged at all. I think he just used every last piece of road that was available, and then a bit more. And that was his style. You know, he loved to drive two things. He drove a car to its maximum, but he loved to drive a car how he wanted to drive it, and the cars responded to that. You know, he sort of, when he obviously he was spectacular in a Nova, but the Nova was relatively light and easy to change direction. But I guess really when we first saw his spectacular style in a four-wheel drive car was with the Legacy, and the Legacy and the Impreza both responded to really been manhandled and to really been moved around, and obviously when he moved to Ford with the Focus, he just did the same with the Focus. And you know, he was not only obviously a unique and character that that people warmed to, but his driving style was unique as well. And you know, his bit of onboard in the Focus in St. Guino or wherever it is, he's one of the most watched onboards of rallying history. And you know, he had this style where he would just throw the car into the corner, and literally it was on almost full opposite lock on the way into the corner, but he never lost a tenth of a second, because he was back on the power instantly, and by the apex it was relatively straight. So it was an incredibly spectacular style, but his entry speed into corners was just amazing, and he had to be incredibly talented to use that driving style, because literally he was flicking the car from one direction to another so quickly, and that's what people loved. People loved to watch his style, and every car he was in he drove to the maximum. And then of course he had the PlayStation game, which took him to a whole new generation, and there was gamers out there, young guys and girls on the PlayStations who didn't even know that Colin McRae existed. He was a Lara Croft of the motorsport, if you like, and they knew him from the virtual world, not from the crazy driving antics. So just an incredible character, and he brought this success to British rallying that British rallying had craved for so long. For those who were from that era, they saw a little bit of it with Roger Clark, and then Tony Pond was all on the fringes, Jimmy McRae was on the fringes, David Llewellyn was on the fringes, and then suddenly Colin McRae comes all the way through and does the business and puts British rallying on the map and became a household name. He was up for winning the Sports Personality of the Year one year, and I think he finished third in his championship year, 95. He should have won it, of course. But can you imagine having a rally driver on Sports Personality of the Year now? Actually, for the outright win, that is. And he was just a household name. And obviously, then Richard followed it up and took the world championship as well. And we had an amazing run of success in this country. And rallying was, as I said, a household. They were household names. The sport was known by everybody in the country. People were buying road cars on the back of what they'd seen in rallying. And amazing times. And obviously, he was a massive, massive part of that.
Couldn't have put it better myself. There's two things that I remember, and they're not obvious ones. I think you, between the two, you've made some kind of iconic ones. But the ones that I remember, and the ones when I first really became aware of Colin properly, and I knew about the Nova stuff, but I'm going back to in the moment at the time, and obviously you heard rumours that there was the quick lad who was Jimmy's lad and everything else, but I remember him in the Sierra Cosworth, and it was the four-door Cosworth, and it was Rally GB, and it was the bolt being welded on the car to keep the door shut. That's when I first really, really sat up and took proper notice, because he just, again, all that manhandling and everything else that you've just made reference to, right? He just, like, he was just dragging this car, kicking and screaming. It just took such a pounder. And obviously, latterly, we had the legacy and what happened, the amount of roles he had on Finland, things like that, obviously surpassed that. But certainly at that time, I don't think I'd ever seen a more battered rally car that people had made such an effort to keep in a rally. That's one. And please search it out, folks. You'll see it. It's on Rally GB. If you're not familiar with it, I'd be very, very shocked. And the other one, again, is another one, which again goes against everything we've just been saying about how talented it was, because there's another incident, I suppose, of an accident as such. But it was the X Games, when he first went over to X Games, and everything you've just been saying, right, of course, about how he was perceived in different parts of the world, America especially, he wasn't seen as a real character. He was seen as this fictitious character, and it's been mentioned numerous times now. But of course, that roll right at the end where he rolled and landed back on its wheels, and I think most people genuinely in the stadium thought that he meant to do it. And I don't think he did, and only probably he would know the answer to that, but I'm pretty certain he didn't. But again, it's just those moments where people, just a sharp intake of breath, and it's just wow. So there you go.
And I'm sure he definitely didn't mean to do it. And I did hear something about this recently, and I can't remember. It might have been Derek Dauncey, who's Ken Block's team manager nowadays. And I think at the time, Derek might have been involved with Vermont Sports Car and Subaru America. And I think they were giving split times to the drivers as they were coming back in the stadium. And I read it somewhere, or somebody told me about it recently. And Colin was just told to push when he came back into the stadium. And obviously, yeah, like you said, goes down in legend that he rolled on the hairpin and dragged it to the line with a puncture and still nearly won. The nice part of that is that Subaru America still have the car, and I believe they're quite keen to do something with it in the future.
Hopefully they do. Hopefully they do. Anyway, boys, we've got to that section of the program. We're going to come to Jack Bengen first because he's got a lot of packing to do because he's going away for a wet weekend. You got any other business for this week, Jack Bengen?
I've got two very quick little bits. I was interested to see that the 2017 M Sport Fiesta has been announced to be at Rally Day in a couple of weeks' time. So first chance really for Joe Public, if you like, to really get up and close and personal to a 2017 World Rally car. And I think I might be changing my plans and heading down now to go and check that out, Fiesta, and see how that gets on. I'm sure it'll be very sideways, and I guarantee it'll be on gravel tyres, and we'll be all over the show at Castle Coombe, which is where Rally Day is. So if you, there's also a competition in MN to win some tickets as well, and a ride in the car, so you might want to check out MN for that as well. Shameless plug. And the other thing I wanted to point out was that we could see an electric rally car competing soon, which I think is quite interesting.
That was mine. I've just made notes on it and everything. Go on.
You've just made notes on it and everything. Well, I wrote the story, mate.
Well, I'll be honest with you, right? I'll tell you where I was going prior to this. Right, I'm just going to say it. Right, there was this thing, the news report that came out, and I wanted clarification from either of you boys that Jaguar are basically ceasing production of diesel and petrol cars, and they're going to full electric by 2020?
No. No, and this is without going too far into detail on this subject, you know, and this is you know how it's been portrayed in the media, and the government have been saying, oh, we've got to get rid of all combustion engines, but they're going to have aim to have electric cars in each part of their range. Ah. But actually, the reality of it is combustion engines are going to be around for the next 20 or 30 years. You know, how many trucks and how many trailers do you see being towed by electric powered vehicles at the minute? And, you know, we might see more and more small capacity petrol engines. We're going to see more and more electric vehicles, but we're still going to see diesels in the bigger stuff for the foreseeable future.
I actually feel like I poked the bear there a little bit.
That is my other hat.
No, because it's a shared thing where there's certain people who, well, not certain people, but there's ways that things are portrayed in the media these days on various sort of social media sites and stuff, and unless it's done properly, and obviously that's something we try and do at MN as much as possible. You know, as a journalist, we're always trying to get the facts straight and present them in the most obvious way possible. But when people do get things wrong online and people pick it up wrong, you know, it is very frustrating when you've put a lot of work into getting the facts straight and you've spoken to all the people involved in that story. And then, you know, for someone else to kind of do the story and do a bad job of it is very frustrating as a journalist. So, yeah, no, it's my understanding that, as Rice said, it'll be in each range. So we're still going to see a lot of combustion.
Where I was going to go is obviously I was actually going to mention roundy. I was going to mention the electric Jaguar series, and that's going to support Formula E. And mm-hmm. Formula E is something I've worked in over the past couple of years, to be honest with you. So I know a little bit about it, but that's a different conversation for a different podcast. Anyway, I was just wondering how far away we would be from having an electric one make series in rallying. And that's where I was going to go my end of the business. And that's where yours kind of quite neatly kind of feeds into this, I guess, because you were about to tell the story about the electric car that's going to be featuring at the Three Sisters towards the end of October.
That's right. Well, Project E-Rally, we've built the car, planning to have a single mate championship in place by next year.
There you go.
So there's the answer to your question. If they get everything right and they can build enough cars in time, then that's when they'll have the championship. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I think it makes perfect sense for, you know, in maybe 3 or 4 years' time for the junior championship to be electric. I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Electric starts at the top and seems to work its way down. You've said with Formula E, and you know, all the technology that the car manufacturers want to use is always implemented at the top, isn't it, in different sort of championships around the world, and then sort of works its way down. So interesting to see this being done so quickly maybe not quickly, because it has been, you know, it's been thought about for a few years now, and it's been in the planning for that long. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it gets on, and I think a single make championship is possible. One thing that is interesting is I understand that the car doesn't actually have a logbook yet, so there's still some work to be done in terms of dealing with the MSA to get all that sorted out and to get the car ready to go for this event. So hopefully they get all that sorted out and then the car's ready to go. But Cameron Davies is going to drive the car, which is quite interesting. Won the Scottish Rally, the Prestone Junior British Rally Championship.
That right. In Scottish. You said that right. Yeah.
Yeah. Me too. Spent a lot of effort making sure I got that right in case I got ridiculed. But he's going to drive the car. And he tells me he was the first person to start a junior rally. He was car one on the first junior rally in 2009. And he's going to be the first person to drive a electric rally car on an event if the car gets its logbook. So that's quite an interesting story as well.
We've kind of combined it our any of the businesses. That just leaves Ryan Champions now.
Well, mine goes to a rally that we've touched on already, and we'll come to a little bit more in a while, and that's the Rally Isle of Man. Well, the Manx International Rally, as it was known for many years, and I'm gonna give you guys a minute to think about this, so I'll come back to you in a minute. But I was thinking about what are your favourite memories from the Isle of Man, and that rally obviously been an iconic round of the British Rally Championship for so long, and I think it's brilliant now it's part of the championship again as the final round. Unfortunately, not so many cars contesting it this year, but it is such a challenge, and for me, I grew up as a big Tony Pond fan, and actually Tony Pond eventually made the Isle of Man his home. He moved there, such was his love for the place. But I remember seeing him in firstly TR7V8s and Rover SD1s, then of course the Metro 6R4. We talked about iconic bits of rallying on board. Who can forget the Harry Vatten and Terry Harriman dear God moment going up Faulty Will in the Manta. Patrick Snyers in the M3, amazing antics in the M3. Mark Lovell doing donuts and reversing into the TV camera just to give away the victory to teammate Russell Brooks. Francois Chatriot reversing into the bank side in the Rothmans Legacy and still dragging it home in second place. There's so many stories. Armin Schwartz made a one-off appearance when it was a round of the European Rally Championship. He was spectacular in the Celica. And who can forget the battle for the 1997 British Rally Championship? But we'll leave that there for the moment.
There you go. I think you asked Jack for ours, and I think you've just listed possibly some of the most iconic ones.
Yeah, go on. Give us one each that I haven't mentioned.
Well, that's unfair because I literally, on Saturday, watched the 1997 Manx Rally it completely, because it was 20 years. It was the battle.
You can't give that up, can you?
I know. And of course, we talk about it with Mark a little bit later on anyway. So that would have been my passion for F2 rallying. And you know, we keep on talking about this, but I just absolutely loved the F2 days, and on tarmac and the Isle of Man. And yeah, you know, Mark talks about it when I won't ruin it, but Mark talks about his love of F2 cars on there as well, and his favorite car to do the events in. So for me, it was that kind of late 90s period for me, surprisingly, where, you know, the kick cars reigned. How about you, Jack Bengen?
Can mine be from before I was born?
Of course it can.
Of course it can.
We've already talked about the 1988 British Rally Championship, but for me, that's without doubt, my favourite, one of my favourite rallying memories, actually, never mind the Isle of Manx. And that's Patrick Snyers on the Tudor Basto Manx in 1988 in his BMW ProDrive M3. Absolutely sideways for the whole thing. Rocked up as a, I don't think it'd be fair to call him a relative unknown at that point, but he was unknown on the island, and no one was quite sure how well he was going to get on. And he basically blitzed the competition. It was a round of the European Championship that year. It had the likes of Robert Drugmans, Fabrizio Tabaton, some of the ERC front runners, and then you had obviously Jimmy McRae, and Phil Collins and people like that as well. So I think memories of that screaming M3 just all over the place, you know, sideways. As you know, we talked about Colin McRae's entry style, even more spectacularly probably Patrick Snyder's was quite sideways or dovetailing going into corners in that M3 and powering it around with the back end. So yeah, that was absolutely sensational for like a 3 or 4 year old to be watching on a regular basis, and I'll definitely never forget that.
And a good point there that you know, until then European drivers had always struggled. It was a round of the European Championship, but it was such a bumpy technical place that the European drivers had always come over and never really threatened at the front in the same way when they came over as a one-off. But obviously Drugmans came over that year, but wasn't as spectacular. But Snyers had the secret weapon. He was in a ProDrive car, and of course they knew just how to build the perfect car for the Isle of Man.
There you go, boys. Can I just ask something here? And I'm going to feel quite old saying this, and this is please don't take this the wrong way, Jack Bengen, but do you know the event sponsor that you've just mentioned, Tudor Basto? Do you know what they did?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Right, I feel incredibly old.
Well, yes, go on.
Sunroofs.
They did do sunroofs.
They made sunroofs. Yeah. Believe it or not, Jack Bengen, right? Sit yourself down, son, strap yourself in, right?
Is this where I put my phone on mute?
We used to buy cars and retrofit a sunroof. Most of them quite badly that leaked, but you didn't buy a car and then put a sunroof in it today. Like, you know, you get it today. You used to buy your car and you go, I've got a few quid here. I'm going to have myself a sunroof. And that's what they made. There you go. That's our gift to you.
Great.
Thanks for being so bloody well interested.
Well, Patrick Snyder's was far more interesting than sunroofs, mate. Sorry.
All right.
Well, yeah, but you might not have been there if it wasn't for the sunroof, Jack.
Yeah.
Hey, that's true.
Yeah, see, yeah.
Or the massive amount of cigarette money that was backing him at the time.
Yeah, there you go. Boys, were...
Nothing to do with Bastos on the side of the car.
No. Boys, we're done. Well, believe it or not, we're at near that hour mark, believe it or not.
I thought you meant forever.
No. We've still got one more episode at least. So that's it. So boys, we'll be back same time, same place next week, I guess.
Absolutely.
There you go. Folks, sit back, relax. We'll go to a little break and then we're going to come back to the legendary Manxman that is Mark Higgins.
This is Absolute Rally, Case Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Case Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. It's good to welcome back a friend of the show and a man who was on, I think, probably this time last year, Mark Higgins. Hello.
Hello, mate. How are you doing, Tony? All right?
We're all right. You and I are both in a very similar position. It's not very often. In fact, I've never been able to say this before, that we were both this time last year going to do the Manx Rally. And, of course, both of us are not doing it this year. I'm all right with it. How are you with it?
I was all right till I started seeing the videos popping up, a few reminders going on of it. You know, when you're away from it, you sort of keep away, and it's in the back of your mind. But my co-driver's doing it at the moment as well, so he's been texting me how good the route is this year. And yeah, it's always a mega event, to be honest. And you know, it's going to be quite a good climax to the championship because there's a bit to play for.
Well, we were talking about this, and it's a program I've been threatening to make because it's 20 years, of course, since the legendary 97. Yeah. Battle. Now, Ryan and I have spoke about this, and I've spoke to various people about this. In fact, I was watching the Manx Rally at the weekend, 97 coverage. And aside from all the cars, obviously, F2 is something which I'd love to talk to you about another time. But how much of that weekend, and I suppose it's similar for the lads this weekend, how much of the battle was psychological that weekend, aside from tyres and machinery and everything else?
It was a real wacky weekend. I mean, a lot of us went there totally on the outside chance of winning. But there were six of us in with a fight. And the whole championship had been very, very up and down. And, you know, there were so many different things to play for. I mean, now you're limited on sort of tyres, you're limited on many things. So there were so many variables. We used to go testing, you know, quite a lot before events with manufacturer support. So it was really quite a big deal. And the Manx was obviously a very important part of the championship. But when Alistair started going badly, he had a bad run, a few problems early on, the championship started opening up. We led at the start, and it was going back and forward all the way through, and all these permeables were popping up. And I know at the end, I was absolutely gutted that I didn't win the rally, which I shouldn't have been, but we ended up winning the championship. But it was a real funny weekend of emotions, and on that stage when Alistair went off and Gwyndaf on the same one, and you know, it was all go.
Absolutely. Now, obviously, we've got three drivers technically that could win. And to be fair, Matt's a massive outside chance. There seems to be he's the third driver, of course. Now, Keith needs quite a lot to go his way, and it kind of feels a little bit like Frederick's to lose. But you know, we always talk about these events, and the Manx being one of them. That you know, you never take anything for granted, do you?
It's such a long event. I mean, look at last year. With Craig, second stage, he's out. Engine problems, you know, the engines are revving for a long time. And you just don't know, you know. You can miss a gear. I mean, look what happened to Frederick last year. one mistake led to another mistake, and he was out of the rally. And if engines go, you've lost potentially the double header as well, haven't you? Because you can't get it going again for the second day, I don't think. I'm not sure of the regulations. But there is a lot to play for, and it can all happen. It's the longest rally, and it's still one of the toughest rallies anywhere, really.
How close were you, Mark, to dusting down the overalls again and getting out on a BRC round this year?
I was really close to this one, and it's a funny old story because I got a phone call. Would I be up for it? And I didn't have to think very long. And it was based on the championship regulations, and they'd made an alteration in the first part of the regs that you could register at any point, but unfortunately, they hadn't altered the second part. So the first phone call was, yep, you can register for points at the Manx. It was to help somebody out in the championship. And then I got a phone call 3 days later after the deal was nearly pretty well sorted to say, we left a bit in the regs. So I was really, really gutted at that, to be honest.
Okay. Can I ask what car it would have been in?
It would have been a Skoda or a Ford. So a proper car.
I'm just looking through the entry list. Pretty much a Skoda or a Ford. Yeah, so yeah.
I would have been happy with either.
Yeah, I'm guessing it wasn't an M1 Felicia. Or a KA. That's all I'll go with. Ryan Champion, I'm sure you've got plenty to say. You normally have.
Thanks very much.
He's been very quiet today so far.
I was just quiet.
Listening to you two, you know. A few things that popped up there, and I'll come back maybe to some of your past rallies on the Isle of Man, Mark, in a while. But just wanted to pick up on last year. I mean, obviously, you really took the fight to Elvin last year, and I mean, you very nearly took the win there last year.
Yeah, I mean, last year was I don't think I really spoke to anybody after the rally, and it was a really frustrating event for us. We had a couple of little issues, and I remember the first thing that sort of got me fired up for the rally, which was quite good, really. It was good old Howard Davis, and he said to me before the start of the rally, be prepared for the biggest whopping of your life. And I thought, ooh, right, there's some motivation. And I hadn't been in the car, and we'd obviously just done the shakedown, so I was really happy to be where we were. We were, I think, 2 seconds off Elvin on the first stage, same as Craig, and we had this different gearbox, which didn't help. And in all fairness, I think in a straight fight, we wouldn't have beaten Elvin if he hadn't had his problem. But with the problem he had, we should have, I think, probably, you know, won the rally. And there was a few timing issues as well that on the data, we had different times than what actually came up on the time cards, unfortunately. So it would have been, we reckon that he probably finished even at the end of the rally on the same tenth of a second to what happened in Castletown. But ifs and buts, and that's a long story, but we were happy to be as close as we were, and it was a good fight, really.
I mean, you're still the most successful man on the Isle of Man, and obviously growing up there, that must give you, you know, you must look back on that warmly, don't you, to be more successful on the Isle of Man than the likes of Tony Pond and Jimmy McRae and the Vatanens and the Toivonens and everybody you grew up on the island watching.
Yeah, it's mega. I mean, to dream of winning the rally was growing up as a kid, to have won any rally on the Isle of Man would have been amazing. And then to have won the amount we have has been fantastic, really. I'm very, very lucky to have done that. And I was looking back at my old car that we managed to set faster stage time on every stage. My Focus has actually come up for sale. But I'm not quite in your league yet, Ryan, so I can't afford to buy that back yet.
I don't believe that, Mark Higgins. You just need to dig deeper in your pocket.
But, all right, I'm not doing that. You know me.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll not go down the road of your Nova that's gathering dust. That beautiful Nova that needs to be seen. But
it will be seen one day.
In action. Yeah. But you'll have to pay for fuel and tyres. You know, that's the other thing. So going back to your, your wins on the Isle of Man, or maybe before your wins on the Isle of Man, I guess, you know, like we just touched on 1997, really the big prize was the championship, but it was head to head between you and Martin for the win, wasn't it? And that would have been your first win, and I guess that's why you were so desperate to get it. You were pushing hard.
Yeah, we were, and I remember we were staying in the Palace back then, and me and Martin, we were all staying in the same hotel, so it was Renault and Nissan. And we'd had a 30-second lead over Martin, and we were sort of maintaining it. And the way it had been going, it had been a second here, a second there, and it was a really comfortable gap. And sort of Martin said, oh, well, that's the way it is. And I said, yeah, well, hopefully, let's see what happens. And then we had the drive shaft fail down on the stage. I think it was the second stage in the morning, which knocked us back over a minute. And then I thought, well, that's it, it's gone. But Nissan said, well, if you go for it, we can still win the Manufacturers' Championship. And it was such a long shot. But then on the short Mackle stage, which was only, this seems like yesterday, actually, 20 years ago. I can't remember what I did yesterday, but I can remember this 20 years ago. And we went into Mackled, which was, I think, about a four-mile stage, and we took 9 seconds off Martin, which thought, oh, bloody hell, here we go. We have got a chance here. So that pushed us, but we'd actually broken a top mount on that stage, which didn't help us on the next one. And then I took the famous rear wheel off, and then we settled the second and put the championship win.
But that wasn't bad considering, was it? I mean, you were like only a minute, I think, behind Martin. I looked at the results earlier on, and I saw the gouge in the road that you took out on three wheels. So considering you did, what, probably 2-3 miles on three wheels, it was still close at the end.
Yeah, well, we had to then drive on three wheels from the end of that stage to the service area, which was probably about 4 miles long. And I remember coming around Sulby, and there's a police car on the left-hand side, and I thought the only way I'm going to get around this is if I overtake the car, which is going alongside the police car at the same time, so he can't see him on three wheels, which gave me about 400 metres before he caught up with me when the boys had actually changed the wheel at the service area.
So anyway, you got to the end of the rally, and yeah, you didn't take the win that year, but you won the championship. And then actually your first win came, what, 3 years later, and it was quite a comfortable win when you actually took the first one.
Yeah, that was in the Astra, and that was a year we'd lost the championship by a point after, another very silly mistake on the Grantham rally, I think it was, when we had that sort of small event put in the BRC. So, yeah, that was a nice win, and that was a great car, the F2 car. That Astra was probably one of my favourite cars that I drove on the Isle of Man, believe it or not. The WRC cars were fantastic, but that little F2 car was just a stunning car when it was working properly. It's 300 brake, 1,000 kilograms, and it was a proper thing.
You've maybe just answered the question, but would that have been your favourite Manx then in the Astra? Would that have been the favourite car of all the ones you drove on the rally?
It was a special car, yeah. The Focus was really good fun as well, of course. That one when we got all the faster stage times, that was quite nice. I think that was 2006. But the Group N cars were good, as you know. They were great to be in, and they were a challenge to drive, but they just didn't look great. You know, they didn't really show what you would happen to do inside to make them go quickly, but there was still a challenge. And I've been beaten some of the World Rally cars, and the Group N cars was nice, but yeah, the F2 car was lovely. We've had some great rallies on the Isle of Man, and quite a lot of second places, unfortunately, as well. But we won't talk about them.
Well, one of the other kit cars I remember you driving on the Isle of Man was the Golf, funnily enough, because I remember us all walking down or running down the riverbank, I should say, with buckets. Or Johnny Miller, right, particularly, I think, was in the river.
Johnny
with
had a helmet full, didn't he? Fair play to him. It's the cleanest helmet's ever been. Sorry, Johnny.
I do remember us all trying to get the fire out. But that sort of brings us back up to date now, because you're back in a Golf and competing in the Chinese Championship with ProDrive. So, tell us a little bit about that. I mean, firstly, I guess the car spec, because a lot of our listeners probably don't know a lot about the cars in China.
Yeah, well, the regs in China are fairly open. It's a 35mm restrictor. I think there's a weight limit of about 1,230 kilograms. And pretty well, you can do what else you want. The Golf is based around the new shape Golf, but very much with the running gear of the Mini World Rally car. So the car was built by ProDrive 3 years ago, and we've got like a Skoda WRC type engine or VW engine in the car, built by Lehman. So it's a lovely bit of kit, proper car, proper suspension, and as close as we're going to get to a World Rally car nowadays. And the championships are really good over there. The only problem is they can't seem to get the rallies actually organised in time, on getting time set. When they do the rallies, they're really good. There's 120 cars in most events. And for example, I'm going over there next Wednesday, and they changed the date of the rally last week. It was going to be Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's now going to be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And that's the sort of thing, unfortunately, the Chinese have a habit of doing. So it's very hard to work out your calendar. But it's great to be rallying over there. And Subaru out there with Chris Atkinson's coming back. We've got a guy called Carl Kruder who's really quick. And they've actually just produced, they've got a 3-car team and we've got a 4-car team. So it's good.
And I know we were chatting earlier in the year at Goodwood, and I know one of the things that came up in the conversation, you said how good it was to be working with ProDrive.
Yeah, well, I spent, story of my life, really. I've spent all my life trying to get a works drive with ProDrive, and now I'm getting on in my latter years of 40. I end up driving for ProDrive with the Subaru on the TT, which is still been an amazing sort of project. I'm now over there in China, but it's still a fantastic team to be with. They know exactly what they're doing. And my engineer, actually, from Nissan in 1997, Richard Thompson, Tomo, is now our sort of chief engineer at ProDrive, which is quite nice. So 20 years later, we're still doing the same stuff.
And what about the rallies then? We see sort of quite a lot of variation in terms of the rallies. Some are incredibly cold, it seems. Some quite soft and sandy. But give us a flavour of the rallies that you go to.
It's really diverse. The first round of the championship we did this year was on an ice lake, obviously about minus 25. We then went to the desert where it was 42 degrees and really high altitude and very fast stages in sand. We've actually got camels that cross the stage on that one. The rally we're going to next week is up back onto tarmac. Still high altitude, but a mountain stage. We don't really know the full extent of it. We then have concrete stages, which again is a different type of tarmac, but still the grip is really, really good. And then we have your typical gravel rally as well. So it's really diverse and it throws a lot of challenges. They seem to run maybe two or three stages one day, maybe two or three times, and then reverse it the next day, which doesn't sound like a big rally, but they're 20K stages and it seems to work well with a nice cloverleaf system.
Now, I mean, you've talked about them changing dates, like at last minute, and we know obviously the WRC event, the planned WRC event was cancelled there. The teams are obviously keen to go there for obvious reasons because it's a big market, but, you know, how do you see that going? Do you think we'll see WRC there soon, or is the infrastructure just not up to it?
I think the infrastructure's there. I mean, to be honest, the last rally could have ran. It was a real shame, and they've really, really harmed themselves and their credibility by cancelling it with 2 weeks to go. I think if everyone had been a bit more honest about it, there could have been some funds raised, and I'm talking maybe off the record here, I think it was more financial than what it was about getting roads ready. I mean, they can build a motorway in 2 days in China, so to get a couple of roads repaired after floods wouldn't have been an issue. So hopefully they can get it back, but I think there's a lot of confidence being lost there, and you know, the WRC aren't going to want to commit is something like that again for the same thing to happen. And this is something we're actually experiencing now. It's getting the commitment to the actual events to happen. Once they do happen, they run really well. It's very professional. The timing, everything's really good. But it's just that getting the sort of province and the local area to agree to the rallies and get that all organised.
It's been a place where you mentioned some of the drivers that have gone there before. Niall McShay was over there, I think, for 5 or 6 years with yourself, yep. Wasn't he, as well? Is Niall still competing out there? Because this is the other thing. We don't get to know what's going on out there, do we?
No, I mean, it was great for me for the Manx last year because, you know, you keep an active, you're actually rallying, but it's sort of in the back burner and nobody really knows what's going on. I mean, we've got Chris Atkinson, Alistair McRae was out there last year, Manfred Stoll did the last rally with us.
Wow.
But Niall, unfortunately, He's not doing any this year because the team he was with has actually pulled out. And I think because of the instability of the organisation getting the rallies to run is, you know, creating a problem for manufacturers. But we've had a good group of, you know, six or seven good drivers having a proper dash at the front, and then our Chinese teammates sort of, you know, they follow on behind.
Is that what, is this kind of the whole gearing is to try and develop, you know, their own drivers and stuff like that and kind of giving you guys the job of being the rabbit to chase? Is that how they see it?
Yeah, well, we can't actually win the championship. A Chinese driver can only win their domestic championship, unfortunately, so we can just help with the manufacturers, which is fair enough. And then, you know, as most of us do, we end up coaching and trying to help our teammates. So it gives them our value, really. And keeps us in the job.
absolutely. Now, I just want to move away. You mentioned about the Focus before. What was the history behind the Focus that you drove? Who drove it before you?
The car that I used in the BRC, it wasn't ever a works car. It was built as a proper, fresh, brand new car.
Wow.
So it didn't really have any proper works history. Otherwise, it'd be quite nice to own it because it'd be worth a few quid, but it's only me. So it's never going to go up in value.
although, speaking of focuses with history, you were kindly lent the Safari Rally winning focus to do the Pirelli Rally, I seem to remember.
Oh, I can't remember that one. I can't remember that one, Ryan. That one ended up on its roof, maybe.
I think the roof aerial was damaged at some point.
I did a lot of work
in that car. That was our PR car, and they did let me use it for the Pirelli that year, and we did still manage just about to win, but it didn't go all to plan. I actually rolled, and you'll really understand this, Ryan. It's really embarrassing on the inside of a corner, so I didn't even get it. It just hooked on the inside and fell over. I would have been much more proud if it had gone on the outside and rolled down the ditch.
I remember it, so I just remember, oh no. That's all I remember from the in-car footage of that, just, oh no.
And I think an orange fell out or something, didn't it, rolled around the car?
I'm glad you said it was an orange. I thought it was something else, to be honest with you.
But very healthy.
good times around. I suppose that was the good times of M-Sport, and, you know, M-Sport being a factory team, and, of course, Colin being there. Because that was around the same time as the latter years of Colin being there, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I signed a contract with M-Sport in 2001. When Vauxhall pulled the plug on the BRC, I had a two-year contract, and I signed in 2001. And it was going to be an amazing year. I mean, Colin was obviously there at M-Sport. I was doing a lot of the testing, and the plan was to do BRC and then maybe a couple of WRC events. But that's the year Foot and Mouth came in, and I just got to do the one rally at the end with the Focus when I sort of got the one-off drive on GB. But unfortunately, that was going quite well till we got pulled out after Carlos had his crash, and so did Colin. But it was pretty special to be teammate to Colin and Carlos on a WRC rally.
It's staggering to think, and this is something that we've talked about at the beginning of the program. Obviously, this coming Friday, the 15th, it is 10 years since Colin, and it's staggering to think that it's 10 years ago. But it's just a very, very weird. It still seems so fresh, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. You know, it's a bit like what's been going on with Lady Diana. Everyone knows where they were at the time when that happened, and I think anybody in motorsport knows exactly where they were when Colin, or then we got the news of Colin. I was about to start a rally in Barbados going over the start ramp, and I got a phone call from my mate Robbie Head. And it's such a massive loss, not just as a driver, but as a good all-around boy. You know, he was a proper lad, and a lot of us, and I'm sure Ryan will remember many good times that we all had together.
Well, I think Ryan probably doesn't want to talk about that in fear of getting himself into trouble. But as a teammate, did he see you as a teammate? Is that how it worked? Did he take on board, you know, what you were doing in testing and things like that? What was he like to work with, I guess, is the question.
Oh, Colin just loved his rallying, and he was in his own. You know, he did his own thing, and the experience he had compared to me when I was there. I mean, when we were actually there at Ford, they would often put a few new bits on my car to test. I mean, for example, we tested on the first Rally GB the gearbox with the electronic gear change. So that was tested on my car before they sort of proved it for the boys for the following year. So we'd talk about things like that, and, you know, I'd always sit with Colin when I could, or Carlos, because you never stop learning in this game. And even now, you know, watching somebody do their trade as well as they did was always, you know, a massive help and stuff you sort of keep with you for a long time.
From someone like yourself, who you say you started in with obviously Colin and Carlos, what was unique about Colin? What aside from everything else, was it the fact that everyone thinks he was just completely on the edge all the time? Was that how you seen it, or was it a very different feeling when you're sat in the car with him?
Very, very different. I mean, he was so relaxed. You'd be completely sideways, and he'd be chatting to you and telling you a joke and talking about something else totally, and just loving his driving, you know. But you just felt safe there. You never felt like it was never out of control. I mean, Carlos was a very different driver. He worked at his driving. I wouldn't say as natural as what Colin was. He was very, very precise and very analytical about how he drove. And then you look at Burnsy, who I sat with a lot, and Burnsy was an incredible talent. I mean, he never even moved the steering wheel when you sat with Burnsy. The car would dance around, but the wheel never moved more than probably 5 or 6 millimetre left to right. So all those three totally different driving styles, but all at the end of the rally putting very similar times up.
It's a very different thing, and I guess we've got something now starting to happen. Do you still keep up to date with what's going on WRC now, Mark?
Oh, yeah, I do. And, I mean, you look at what's going on with Loeb and the way Loeb drives and how we've all changed our driving styles because of him. And that was a massive thing. You know, when Colin was in the team, Colin being that raw talent and how we all used to drive, that has totally changed now as well. And the way the cars that have been developed to suit the more racing style, which unfortunately in some areas works, and it's not quite spectacular, but then you watch the WRC and the speed those cars are doing in, and what they're going over the jump site is incredible.
You say that, and that's the man who drove that ridiculous Subaru round the Isle of Man with 700 horsepower. So that, I think that's a massive sign of just how impressive it all is. But I'm guessing you're not a betting man. But if you had a few pennies and you thought I could win enough money here to buy that Focus back and put some tyres and fuel in my Nova, where would you put it on WRC this year?
Where would I put the Focus?
No, where would you put the money? Where would you put the money if you were a betting man and we allowed you to make a bet and that the win of that bet would allow you to buy your Focus back? Where would you be putting your money this year?
You know, that's a really, really difficult question because there has been a lot of reliability issues. I mean, you'd never bet against OJ, would you? Because of what he's been doing, but I don't know. Let me have a think about that one. Come back to me.
Text us back. Now, before I let you go, we started with BRC as well. Yep. We've got, as I say, we've got three drivers that potentially could win it. One is very much an outsider. Keith is probably slightly closer to Frederick. Where do you see the win going and where do you see the championship going?
From what I saw of Frederick last year, I was very, very impressed with his pace. I think he will be strong on the Isle of Man. He's been there before now, so he's got a bit more of an idea what the roads are. But I have heard the route is a proper route this year and back to a lot of the classic roads. Now, Keith on his day has got incredible pace. If he can keep it all together, but he needs to have a look on his side. I can't see Frederick dropping below sort of second. I think he'll manage it, and that's all he has to do to win the championship, isn't it? If he gets 2 seconds, has he still won? Is that correct?
Yeah. That's pretty much how it works, yeah. So
which is a nice position to be in, but the other boys are going to be pushing hard. They've got nothing to lose, so, you know, the pressure's going to be on. It'll be interesting.
Do you think the advantages, of course, a man that you know quite well from back in those days we've just been talking about, M Sport, Martin Wilkinson, of course, who's looking after Frederick and manages not only the car but also him, and we've seen, you know, bits and pieces over the last couple of years of how he kind of mind manages him as well. Does that make a difference, having someone like Martin there kind of in your corner?
Yeah, definitely. You know, he's got all that knowledge of the rallies. He's been around for a lot of years with Colin and back in those days. He knows those rallies better than anybody does. And it's just that confidence that you can ask Martin a question and you'll get an answer. It's not bullshit. It's an answer. And you know you can rely on it, and that's worth a massive amount. I've got the similar thing there with Richard Thompson back with us in Pro Drive. You know, their wealth of experience, they just give you the answer straight away. And confidence is everything in this game. And if you're feeling good and right, you can put the results in.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we'll be watching keenly, and no doubt you will be as well. As you say, your co-driver from China is also part of that battle, of course, sat alongside Matt. So hopefully he keeps him safe. And obviously you're off to China then next week.
Yeah, off to China on Wednesday, so looking forward to that. And yeah, definitely keeping an eye on the Manx. And in a way, I think I'd be a bad spectator if I went over there, but I'll definitely be keeping an eye on it from over here.
Happy days. Listen, folks, that was Mark Higgins. Thank you so much for the download. You know, we will live at @absolute_rally on Twitter and facebook.com/absoluterally. Folks, we'll be back same time, same place, in your little podcast hole, same time next week.